Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Leona Brando, and I am calling in regards to Blog Talk Radio Shedding Light. We have with us today our guest, again, Lynn Nanos, author and writer of Breakdown, which is an interesting book on the psychological issues that are going on in this country today around the people that have suffered from mental illnesses or whatever. And here we are going to welcome Lynn, who is a social worker, author, and active member of the National Shattering Silence Coalition that advocates for the mentally ill population. Today, Lynn is going to be, again, shedding light on her work, her philosophical and factual views of the mentally ill and the needs of such less fortunate and needy individuals. She will also be sharing the contact information for all who are interested in reading more about her work and the wealth of information she has to share, which may also very well benefit many in the community who are experiencing situations preventing them from obtaining the help that they need, or family members needing information on how to get help for a loved one. So let's welcome Lynn back for the final take on her book, Breakdown, A Clinician's Experience in a Broken System of Emergency Psychiatry. Lynn is going to be shedding a lot of light on today's topic, and I want to welcome her with open arms. Thank you so much for being with us, Lynn, and we'd like to have you tell us more about your book and how everyone can obtain the book at the end of this series. We thank you for being with us, and again, Lynn, welcome.
Thank you, Leona. So the full title of my book, as a reminder, is Breakdown, A Clinician's Experience in a Broken System of Emergency Psychiatry. And I wanted to just review a little bit the first two sessions. When you and I first met, I explained my role as a mobile emergency clinician. So by mobile, I go anywhere in the community where crisis is occurring, even on street corners, street benches, city hall, people's homes, homeless shelters, and this is the purest type of assessment there is. It's impossible to see garbage not having been taken out for months on end in an office. So this is one of the most exciting parts about my job. I also described why I wrote the book. It is impossible to affect any major macro change in regards to policy in a clinical setting. Then in the second interview, I went over the policy initiatives in Breakdown. So as a review, these include malingering needs to be curtailed, the federal Institutions for Mental Diseases exclusion law should be repealed, the number of inpatient psychiatric beds should be increased, inpatient units that discriminate against the most challenging cases should be held legally accountable. So discrimination by inpatient units against these patients is uncalled for. The Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act should be revised. Assisted outpatient treatment should be applied without hesitation and promoted throughout the United States. Just three states are without this. And the funding of organizations that tout the belief that mental illness does not exist should not be funded by any government. psychiatric involuntary transfer and hold laws should be revised. As it stands now, these are in most states too restrictive, making it often close to impossible for patients to access inpatient units. And finally, borderline personality disorder should be classified as a serious mental illness in all places, not just the National Institute on Mental Health. So I'd like to jump into some case examples. One of these involves Antonio. Antonio came to the attention of police because of his neighbors. His neighbors complained to police officers that he was intruding, presenting dead insects to them, knocking on their doors, and when they did not respond, he smeared dead insects on their doors and even attempted to give to them containers, sometimes even forcibly. He violated countless formal orders to stay away from these neighbors, even got arrested. And when I go to his home with the police, I immediately notice that there are containers of insects on the floor. They're not covered. He is malodorous. He apparently has not showered in weeks, perhaps months. His hair is matted. He, through all of this, repeatedly tells me that he has no problem. There is no reason for us to be there. So if it weren't for the police being notified, I would never have been there, nor would any other professional. He very quickly and vaguely tells me why he's taking his medication, but it's clear that he does not have a true understanding of why he's taking these medications, albeit they are psychiatric. After consulting with his psychiatrist and his sister, and of course with the police, it's clear that he needs to be transported to the hospital, not just for medical clearance, considering he's approaching elderly years and could have some underlying medical problem. He needs to go to the hospital to be contained, which means if he were to stay home, he would continue to deteriorate, and a bed search while he's at home and not wanting any help would have been impossible. The way he got to the hospital was forcibly, unfortunately. Despite the persuasion attempts by the ambulance crew, myself, police officers, the visiting nurse who was there, he was not willing to budge. And he almost assaulted me, which was intercepted by the police. He ended up getting handcuffed and brought to the police. He was brought to the hospital, sorry. And after I typed the case report, I found out that the hospital emergency department was planning on releasing him back home. And in fact, I confirmed later that they did actually do this. And he never really got the help that he needed. He presumably continued to intrude on his neighbors and psychiatrically deteriorate. And unfortunately, the civil commitment criteria are so that patients throughout the country too often are getting released either back home or to the streets without any help. And this is often referred to as the revolving door.
Exactly.
And they're also getting prematurely discharged from inpatient units. And this especially occurs when they're not wanting any help. And they're not wanting help because they're lacking awareness of their illness, which, again, is called anosognosia.
I notice a lot of these things happen when they fail to take their medication. Is there any, when the psychiatrist gives them the medication or the prescription, is there any oversight? In most cases, there's no one to ensure that they're actually taking the medication, and it seems like that's when the crisis situations occur. So, and as you said, you touched on something that I have a problem with myself, is a lot of times these patients, when they go to the hospital, they may adjust their medication or they may ensure that they take the medication at that specific time. But after that, they release them. And the problem is it's a revolving door. These things are happening over and over again. But it seems to be happening mostly when they fail to take their medication or when the medication needs to be adjusted. Do you see that happening a lot with the patients that you have run into?
Definitely. And the most common reason for medication noncompliance is anosognosia, which is detailed extensively in Breakdown. And a solution to this is assisted outpatient treatment. And we know, based on research studies, that the black robe effect truly works and increases the chance of recipients of this program taking their medication. So the black robe effect means that patients are very likely to follow the instructions, the orders of judges because of their authority. Wearing the black robe gives them the appearance of having authority, as they do have that authority. And patients are very likely, far more likely to listen to the judge rather than a typical outpatient provider. And without assisted outpatient treatment, the most effective means of them taking their medication is these court orders.
And usually that's without someone being under the age of 21, but over the age of 21, where they have to be court ordered? Or does that, does AG apply?
They have to be at least 18, is my understanding. I'm not sure if that's the case in all states that allow AOT, but in the few states that I researched, they have to just be adults. And they, in order to qualify, have to have had a history of difficulty engaging with outpatient systems, non-compliance with medication, the history of violence, history of severe mental illness, obviously. And another case I'd like to discuss is that of Sarah, in which again, this was referred to me by a police officer. We went to her home, and the police got involved because she was excessively calling them, asking them to arrest her neighbors. She believed that falsely, so she was clearly delusional, that her neighbors were going into her apartment and stealing her belongings. And when I asked her, how does she know this? She said that whenever she came home, objects were moved in positions which were not caused by her. And ironically, her apartment was immaculate, very neatly kept. She was very clean, organized. Her refrigerator was filled with good food. But all the while, she was not psychiatrically medicated. She had obviously been involuntarily brought to the hospital in the past. And I knew this because she knew the lingo. She knew the key phrases. For instance, before I even question her about whether she's suicidal or homicidal, she blurts out, "I'm not suicidal. I'm not homicidal. I don't need to be sectioned." So in Massachusetts, that means Section 12, and Section 12 is what it's what people refer to as being involuntarily brought to the hospital or held against their will. And she then said to me that she was brought to the hospital, that the police made her go there because they said that she was hearing voices, but in her view, there was nothing wrong. There was no problem. She was never hearing any voices. So she continued to describe a lot of delusional content. And she didn't qualify for inpatient hospitalization. And there were many reasons to back this up. She was she was fully oriented. She was well groomed. She was eating and sleeping well. She was showing many signs of severe mental illness, but did not meet inpatient criteria. So unfortunately, I was forced to just leave her there and wish her luck. And knowing that she will continue to bother the police with excessive phone calls, begging them to arrest her neighbors, is not enough. It's not enough evidence showing that she needs to be hospitalized. So many patients that I've encountered have fallen on the fence between needing to be hospitalized and being okay and surviving in the community. And that happens a lot. And when I encounter these cases that are on the fence, it's really important to use my instincts and my best judgment. And oftentimes, using collateral input helps to tip the scale either way.
Yeah. It's sad. They're actually falling through the cracks, and it is a shame because so many of these people, they end up And I remember one time there was someone that had gone through something similar. This was years and years ago, some kind of psychological problem, and he didn't take his medication at the time. But what happened is the police said that there's nothing they can do unless the person actually commits a crime. And it's a shame when they talk about things like this, and then someone gets hurt, and before you know it, you know, they're not getting the help they need. They're actually getting, you know, sentenced or put in prison or jail or whatever the case may be. But there's a lot of that that does go on, and they fall through the cracks. And this is where, as you say, they need to do more than what they're doing in these cases. They really
mm-hmm.
need to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are many times in which the laws tie clinicians' hands. And there are moments when I can predict disastrous human costs due to the dysfunctional system, but have no legal ability to prevent them from happening. And it's unfortunate that the police have been left to oftentimes do what the mental health system is not doing and has not been able to do because of these restrictive laws. In most states, the criteria for inpatient hospitalization too restrictive and not preventative in any way. Oftentimes, the law requires that danger is already in progress and already occurring. But an ideal system would take a preventative approach and look more closely at the need for treatment and whether the patient is following the recommendations of the treatment providers. So noncompliance with treatment recommendations is a very common reason for rehospitalizations. And I strongly promote assisted outpatient treatment in breakdown. And the state that I'm in, which is Massachusetts, does not have this. And I plan to testify in favor of it later on this year. There have been hearings every 2 years at the State House. And unfortunately, the greatest opposition at these hearings has been groups dominated by peer specialists. And I have a chapter in Breakdown is titled Stigma and Anti-Psychiatry. And it's troubling and disturbing that the Massachusetts government funds a group titled Recovery Learning Communities, and they either tout the belief that mental illness does not exist or minimize the seriousness of it. And this group strongly opposes assisted outpatient treatment. And my belief is that if there were more people receiving assisted outpatient treatment, there would be significantly less seriously mentally ill people in prison. And, you know, assisted outpatient treatment takes a preventative approach, and it certainly decreases the criminalization problem that we have.
Exactly. Lynn, tell me, is there what would you like the members of society to do, the populace to do in Massachusetts, in a way that they can help to kind of like get these policy changes, in a way that they can actually start seeing some more changes made in this specific area of mental illness? As you say, taxpayers are paying an outrageous amount of taxpayer dollars going into the prisons when they can be, these things can be resolved in long-term residential treatment programs, or as you say, assisted living, that really takes it serious, that takes a serious policy to it. But what can the members of society do to try to help promote these necessities for the certain treatments that are needed? I know they have all kinds of change.org, a lot of these petitions that are out there, but making calls to politicians or doing things like that, would that help?
Definitely. And there's a huge disconnect between what the legislators are seeing and the clinicians on the front lines seeing. And the purpose of Writing Breakdown was to close that gap a little bit and persuade the legislation to endorse assisted outpatient treatment and promote it. And it's very important to not just make calls, but show up to the State House for these hearings. And it's very easy for anyone to find out when these hearings occur. It's simply a matter of getting on the government websites, and the hearing times and dates are right there, based on a simple search engine of a few keywords, and showing up to the State House and testifying is extremely important, and I don't think enough people do that. And this book is intended to raise awareness of the plight of those suffering, and with increased awareness comes motivation to act. And I also encourage readers to send Breakdown to their legislators. And if legislators get a view of what is happening on the streets and in mental health agencies, I think that they are more likely to do the right thing.
Can you once again give your website address to the audience and ways that they can get the book and also get in touch with you if need be?
Sure. Anyone can contact me through my website. It's lynnnanos.com. It's lynnnanos.com. And the digital and paperback versions of Breakdown are available at all popular online stores. Thank you.
And also, we're going to be running out of time again. And Lynn, you have such a wealth of information to share, and I would really like to have you back on the show again. And I was thinking maybe in a few weeks if you'd be willing to come back on and talk more about all of these things, because there is so much that I am interested in hearing as well.
Sure. Thank you.
Okay. We can plan that in about 2 or 3 weeks, hopefully, and we can get an update on everything that's going on with you, with the book, and with what you're doing. So I want to thank you so much for being on with us today, Lynn. It's been a pleasure, and I really, really hope you will come back. And if anyone needs to get a hold of Lynn, you have her website, and we thank her for being on the show with us. Thank you so much, Lynn.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.